left this world. I know how much I have hurt you. It showed in your eyes when we last met at the time of Dylan's arrest. I know you thought me cold and heartless when I decided to abandon you and agreed to marry Dylan. But I want you to know that I always loved you. I had no choice but to marry Dylan. I was a single woman with a child on the way. At that time, you had only just received your 8-year sentence, and my mother agreed to welcome me and the child back into her life if I was married. She couldn't bear the shame of having an unmarried mother as a daughter. It would have resulted in the ultimate humiliation for the family. I have lived with the guilt and the embarrassment all my life. I will die having lived a lie. For the hurt this will cause you, I am sorry. No doubt God will see fit to punish me when I finally meet him. My little Peggy brought joy for Dylan and myself, but she should have brought you joy. After all, she was your child. I should have told you the truth when Dylan was in prison and you were still looking out for us. I know you will never forgive me, but please don't take it out on her. She is returning to Bermondsey with her husband and her sons. Life has become very hard for us in Ireland. I know I cannot ask anything of you, but please find it in your heart to look out for her, your own daughter, and her 2 sons. I fear that her husband will let her down. I still love you, and I always will. God bless. Annie. Cyril sat back and stared into space. Huge tears filled his eyes, and he allowed them to tumble down his cheeks. Jesus, Mr. Bates, you never knew. How sad, so sad. After wiping his tears away, he thumbed through the letters until he found just one more written by Dylan. It had been opened and folded back down. He quickly unfolded the letter and read the words. To my dearest friend, it is with much sadness that I tell you that Annie passed away this morning. Time is a healer, as they say. I know you set me up for that job, Arthur, and yes, at first I was angry. I served time away from my Annie and Peggy, but I realised why you did it, and the truth is, Arthur, I would have done the same. But I forgive you for it all, and I am sorry for the pain I caused you. I need a favour, my friend. My Peggy is returning to Bermondsey. Please, would you look out for her? That husband of hers is no good. As you would call him, Arthur, a right shitbag. One day we'll meet again and perhaps laugh over the old days, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Take care of yourself, Arthur. Yours faithfully, Dylan. Another tear rolled down Cyril's cheek. You never knew, Dylan, that Peggy was Mr. Bates's child. And you, Mr. Bates, never knew either. The grandfather clock in the hallway chimed 4 times. Where had the time gone? Thought Cyril, as he stared at the letters. He knew he should throw them in the fire and leave all the secrets to go to ashes, as Mr. Bates and Danny had done. Yet they were a part of him. Mr. Bates was his flesh and blood. He had taught him all he knew, and it was true what he had said to the man in the hospital, that he was like a father to him. He suddenly laughed. Granddad, eh? Just as he placed the letters back inside the suitcase, he noticed a photograph of a man in baggy trousers and a loose cream shirt. He was leaning against a wall and smoking a cigarette. Cyril stared in shock. It was like looking at himself. It couldn't be Mr. Bates, surely. But as he read what was written on the back, it was there in black and white. He turned the photo back over and stared, unable to take it in. Mr. Bates was a big man. His hair was fair, his face was fuller, and his eyes were lighter. Perhaps sadness had made him lose weight and left him so sallow and gaunt-looking in his later years. Yet in that photo, he really smiled, almost beaming, as if his face was alive with pleasure. He put the photo back in the suitcase. Cyril decided there and then that there was no way he was going to burn any of the letters. He just couldn't throw the past away. And the one lesson he'd learned was that he wouldn't waste away his days and end up like his real grandfather. He would fill his life with happiness as much as he could. He thought about his mother, and it made sense how Mr. Bates had helped her. Of course it was him who had thrown the landlord's body down the cellar. He would have done it to protect her because he loved her. Maybe he knew all along that she was his daughter. However, Cyril knew that his mother loved Dylan as her father, and so he surmised that if Mr. Bates knew this as well, he had decided never to tell her the truth. It wouldn't be fair to shatter her illusions of the man who had raised her. Before he left to return home, he took one last look around to make sure he had cleared all of Mr. Bates's personal effects away. He'd already donated the clothes to the poor. The trunk in the spare bedroom was empty. But as Cyril turned to leave, he noticed a loose floorboard, like the one downstairs. At first he assumed it was only loose, but as he looked more closely, he noticed that a nail was newer than the others. He pulled a penknife from his jeans and prized the board free. Putting his hand inside the cavity, he felt some papers. It was a surprise because he thought he might find a gun. As soon as he dragged the papers out, he realised that they were drawings made by a professional, probably an architect. At first, he couldn't make head nor tail of them, but then, when he studied the details, he could see they were technical drawings of two different buildings from different positions. He unrolled the first sheet of paper and studied it carefully, and then he looked in the margins where there were a series of annotated notes connected by hand-drawn arrows to key points on the drawing. Sitting on his haunches, he laughed out loud.
"Ha ha ha! Well, bugger me, Mr. Bates. You were a brilliant man."
The drawings were plans to break into two different depositories, one done by entering through the shop next door. He shook his head when he remembered, on one of the last prison visits, Mr. Bates telling him to look under the floorboards in his cottage, but he'd only found the one in the living room, where there were guns, money and all sorts. He'd never in his wildest dreams expected Mr. Bates to mean this one as well. Excitement built up like a tsunami as he realised he could execute this undertaking with careful planning. Blakey was shit-hot at blowing things up. Frank could stop anyone in their tracks who got in the way. And he could organise the whole setup. They were a good team. Perhaps he was like his real grandfather, after all. Chapter 26. Marcus and Tilly were over the moon to be moving from their grotty flat so soon with their new baby daughter. Cyril had left all the furnishings so they could replace them if and when they chose to. Marcus was even more thrilled that he was now the proud owner of Mr. Bates's former cottage, which he had bought for a fraction of the price. With the exchange and completion on his own property having reached a successful conclusion, Cyril received the all-important call. Cyril and the estate agent had agreed that they would meet at Cyril's new property, where the latter would hand over the keys. He thanked the estate agent as soon as the keys were in his hand. But the minute the estate agent left, Cyril sighed. All his plans had been building up to this point. He should be standing in the front garden of his very own palace, with a brandy in his hand and his arm around his Flossie's waist. He should be ecstatic, but he wasn't. He still hadn't broken the news to Flossie about the purchase of the house in Chislehurst. Things seemed different between them, but he couldn't put his finger on why. Flossie seemed to be miles away most of the time. He'd taken her to all the top restaurants, all the ones she loved. He'd spoiled her rotten, and still she was so distant. He wondered if she was pregnant and didn't know how to tell him. Not that he was ready for kids just yet, but it wouldn't have changed anything. He loved her with all his heart. He thought that perhaps taking her out and buying her things wasn't enough, and maybe she wanted to know where their relationship was going. Looking up at the big house, he smiled. She would be as proud as Punch to be living at this highly sought-after address. What woman in their right mind wouldn't? He went inside, just to check that the previous owners had left all the furnishings, especially the bedding with all its frills. True to their word, they'd left the contents in situ. He wandered from room to room and admired all the finishes. It was perfect. Now all he needed was to collect the ring. Locking the door behind him, he raced across the drive to his car and had a burst of excitable energy. He tore away and drove to Mr. Ezra's shop to make the final payment for the engagement ring. He imagined Flossie's face when he handed it to her. His thoughts turned to how he would propose. Should it be in their new home, on bended knee, or should he organise a huge party in a hall like Gwynnie had? Ezra was behind the counter, which was unusual. Normally, it was his pretty wife.
"I was hoping to see you myself, Mr. Reardon. I suppose you're here to make the last payment on the diamond? A very, very lucky girl. How are you, Mr. Ezra?
Good. Very good.
Now, Mr. Reardon, as you may already know,
he looked over Cyril's shoulder and narrowed his dark beady eyes,
I am a man who has, shall we say, my fingers in many pies. And it has come to my attention that you have a product of top quality.
Cyril looked the man over.
Don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Ezra.
I believe it comes from Colombia.
Still don't know what you're on about.
Ezra nodded and smiled.
Good. I like to deal with people who know when to keep shtum. Mr. Bates, God rest his soul. He told me I could trust you.
Cyril inclined his head and raised his chin.
Oh, yeah. So what else did Mr. Bates say about me?
Ezra looked over Cyril's shoulder again.
He said that I was to look out for you. Let's just say that Arthur, Dylan and myself knew each other a long time ago. There are very few people who I trust. However, I am told that I can trust you.
Cyril smirked.
Well, that is true. But how can I say the same about you?
Because I will tell you something that only Arthur and I know, and it's probably a question that has circled your mind more than once. This will prove to you I can be trusted, and, by the way, I will offer no other proof.
Cyril leaned closer.
Go on, then. Try me.
Ezra smiled before he looked deadly serious.
It was Mr. Bates who threw the landlord's body down the cellar.
Cyril felt his body prickle with goosebumps. It was the eerie way in which the jeweller had said those words. But he knew then that Ezra could be trusted. He was right. Mr. Bates would have told no one.
So, Mr. Ezra, it looks like we may be in business. I can send a sample to you tonight. If you like it, then we can come to some arrangement.
Ezra was nodding.
Good. I won't tread on your toes. And please, don't tread on mine.
Cyril nodded politely back.
Perfect. Now then. The ring.
Ezra retrieved a small box from inside his jacket pocket. He placed it on the counter and popped open the lid.
There you are.
Cyril held the diamond ring up to the light and admired its sparkle.
She's going to love it.
Ezra laughed.
Never underestimate a woman, Mr. Reardon. Never believe you know what goes on inside their mind. But she has to be insane if she doesn't fall in love with that piece. It once belonged to an Arabian princess. All the way.
Oh, cut the crap, Mr. Ezra. I don't give a flying fig. It's a big diamond that shines. That's all I want. Leave all the old flannel to me. I'm sure I can concoct a better story than an Arabian princess.
Ezra's face was a picture as he laughed along and patted Cyril's arm.
Me and you will do well in business.
Just as Cyril was about to close the door behind him, Ezra called him back.
Mr. Reardon, if you ever decide to pay the depository a visit, please give me prior warning. There are a few things I would like to remove from there first.
Cyril's eyes widened. It was true then. Mr. Ezra really did know Mr. Bates very well. Cyril left the shop with so much on his mind. The landlord, the safe deposit building's footprint, and the story he should make up about the ring, so that his Flossie would feel $1 million. Once he was back in the flat, he had a quick bath, put on his best aftershave and suit, and headed up the concrete steps to meet Flossie. He would have to find out what type of engagement do she would like, without giving away the fact that he intended to propose to her. He would have asked Trudy, but he was worried that she would spill the beans and ruin the surprise. He banged on the door and waited. He could hear the familiar clip-clop of heels before the door opened, and there, in her fluffy high-heeled slippers and wearing an almost see-through negligee, stood not Flossie, but Sonia. Cyril felt embarrassed and wanted to look away, but there was nowhere to look.
Is Flossie in?
He asked, staring at the floor.
No, Cyril, she's,
He looked up, sensing she was faltering.
Where is she? I don't know. The hairdressers, maybe, or...
She paused.
I don't know, love. I'm sorry.
Cyril smiled and walked away. It was odd, since Sonia was always so loud and brash, but today, for some reason, she was quiet and almost withdrawn. 2 days passed, and Cyril tried again, but once more Flossie was out. Deciding to get down to business, He left a message with her mother for Flossie to meet him at the Talk of the Town on Saturday. He told Sonia to inform her daughter that she was to put on her best dress, as she would be met by a chauffeur who would be taking her for a celebratory night out. He didn't let on, though, that the chauffeur would be driving a Rolls Royce. Strangely, the planning details were not Cyril's at all. They were Frank's. It was his idea that his best friend should book a table for all of them, the lads and their other halves. And when the Black Forest Gâteau was served, he would get down on one knee and propose to Flossie. Once the formalities were over with, the two of them would be whisked away by their chauffeur to their new house. There, Cyril would have a beautiful bunch of red roses in the bedroom, and then, if his intended wanted to have a huge do for all their friends and families later on, he would book a decent hall and invite everyone. He would have caterers and a constant flow of champagne. Frank had surprised Cyril with his very romantic ideas. Saturday evening came, but Cyril still hadn't heard from Flossie. He assumed that she would catch up with him at the restaurant. The Talk of the Town was one of their regular haunts, and as far as he was aware, she loved the place. Cyril arrived with Frank and Trudy and was shortly joined by Marcus and Tilly. Blakey hurried in with Cindy on his arm. But in contrast to the others, Cyril wasn't in a relaxed state at all. He was so anxious about the proposal that he'd downed two shots of vodka before he'd even got around him for everyone else. Eventually, he took his seat, and Tramon, the waiter, who made it his job to serve Cyril because he always gave the best tips, was seen hovering.
"Mr. Reardon, shall I pop some champagne for you?"
Cyril looked up.
No, not just yet. I'm waiting for Flossie."
Everyone chit-chatted over their plans, while Cyril made a series of nervous glances towards the door. He looked at his watch. It was 7:30 p.m. She was half an hour late. Tramon hovered again.
"Can I bring over some hors d'oeuvres, Mr. Reardon?"
Cyril nodded.
"Blimey, I'm starving. Can you get some bread on the table, sweetheart?"
asked Trudy.
"Trude,"
tutted Frank.
"What did I do? I can't help it if I'm hungry. All I had were two sandwiches and an angel cake at lunchtime."
"You could wait for Flossie for starters, Trude."
Trudy looked around the table.
"Bleeding Nora, she's late."
She glanced at her watch and then frowned at Frank. Another half an hour passed and Cyril was now feeling sick.
"I hope nothing's happened. I sent a car for her and all." "She's probably still getting ready, mate. You know what girls are like," said Blakey. "Not my Flossie. She's never late," replied Cyril,
as he rose from the table.
"Look, all of you stay here. I'll square up the bill. I'm off to see if I can find her."
"Marcus, love, you go with him. I'll be all right here," said Tilly. "In fact, why don't you boys all go and us girls will stay, in case she arrives here."
Frank stood up and kissed Trudy on the forehead.
"Here, girl, use that to help pay the bill, just in case we're not back in time," he said,
as he placed a £5 note on the table. It was obvious that Cyril was getting worried. Marcus and Blakey also slapped a few pounds on the table and followed Cyril to the door. Frank held the door open for Cyril to climb into his car.
"She's probably on her way, mate. Don't worry too much." "I've got a bad feeling about all this, Frank."
Marcus and Blakey climbed into the back seats and remained quiet. They were concerned more about Cyril. His positive, almost carefree state of mind was not present now. In fact, neither of them could recall ever seeing him look so worried. Normally, nothing ever seemed to bother the man. Frank drove to the estate and stopped in a space below the tower block.
"Are you going to go up and see if she's in? She might be unwell."
Cyril nodded, but didn't reply. He hurried up the steps and banged on the door. Giving no thought to who was in there, his impatience had him banging hard again before he heard a voice.
All right, keep your hair on."
Flossie's mother opened the door, dressed this time in a puffy nylon dressing gown. Cyril leaned against the wall out of breath.
"Where is she? You gave her the message, didn't you?"
he asked accusingly. But it was the sympathetic expression on her face that told Cyril that Sonia knew more than she'd been letting on earlier.
"Yes, love, I did."
"Well?"
snapped Cyril.
"All I know is that she said she was off out and she would be back later."
"So was she meeting me at the restaurant then, or what?"
She shrugged her shoulders.
I don't know what she's flaming well playing at, love. A driver came knocking and I had to send him away because she'd already gone. But I got him to fetch me some fish and chips first, though. Hope you don't mind.
Where did she go and who the fuck with? Because all her friends are at the restaurant waiting for her.
Cyril, I have no idea. She ain't been the same lately, the stuck-up cow.
With a heavy sigh, Cyril was about to walk away when he noticed a small case to the left of her feet.
Going away, is she?
Sonia looked just as surprised as Cyril when she saw the case.
Well, I'll be fucking buggered. What the hell is that girl of mine up to? Oh, Cyril, love, I am so sorry.
Don't worry. Just tell her I called.
By 9:30 p.m, they were heading back to the restaurant to meet the girls. Cyril had hoped that Flossie would have had a change of heart and would be there to greet him with some satisfactory explanation. Unexpectedly, Frank slammed on the brakes and pulled over.
Is that her?
Cyril glanced in the direction of Frank's eyeline. He couldn't believe it. Almost directly across from their car was a posh restaurant with floor-to-ceiling windows. Cyril stared, squinting his eyes. He felt his heart pounding and a wave of sickness rushed over him. He jumped out of the car to be followed by Marcus, Blakey and Frank. They all stared as Flossie rose from her seat and allowed a man to wrap a mink fur coat around her shoulders. Flossie hadn't seen them. She was obviously far too busy to notice anyone other than the man she was with. She tilted her head, blushing, but held his hands to her neck longer than a friend would. Then Cyril felt a lump in his throat when he saw the man kiss her neck. It was exactly what he used to do when he would fasten on a new necklace. Rooted to the spot, he just gazed at his girl. The woman who he treasured, the woman who he loved so much, was being touched and caressed by another man. With his hand in his pocket, he turned the small engagement box over and over. He had seen enough and needed to look away before he did something stupid.
Fuck me, Cyril. Let's give that cunt a good larruping. I've wanted to do that for years to the flash bastard.
Cyril then twigged that Frank knew who the guy was. Cyril straightened up, and as soon as he realised who was fussing over his bird, every muscle in his body went rigid. The anger raged inside him, and if he could have breathed fire, he would. But instead, he took a few rapid breaths to calm his heartbeat before he had a coronary.
Let's go, lads.
Frank spun around.
What? You mean you're going to let that pompous flash prick get away with taking your bird? Oh, come on, Cyril. Everyone knows she's your bird, including that cunt. I won't fight over a woman. I don't care who he is. Leave it, Frank. I thought more of you, Cyril. You're not going to let him get away with that, are you?
Cyril flared his nostrils.
You what, Frank? You thought more of me, did you?
Frank lowered his shoulders and ran his hands through his hair.
Look, mate, I'm sorry. Really sorry. It's just that I'm so fucking mad.
Frank, leave it to me, eh? Said Cyril, as he lowered his voice. Frank nodded and pulled Cyril close, placing an arm around his shoulders.
Her loss, mate. Her fucking loss.
They all climbed back into Frank's car, and as they drove away, Cyril saw his Flossie with the one man he secretly hated, Lord Chambers. It seemed as though he had it all, the mansion, the Bentley, the clothes, the money. And now he had his girl. He may have been born rich, but he wasn't born with the right to take any girl he liked. He sighed out loud as they drove away, feeling sick with heartache. Frank knew his best buddy would want to go home. He could sense the sadness and could feel his anguish. He would feel the same if it was Lord Chambers slobbering over his Trudy. He wanted to go and hunt the man down, but it seemed as though Cyril had something up his sleeve. He knew Cyril only too well. He had seen the lengths Cyril would go to have a principle established and honoured.
God help Lord Chambers, thought Frank.
Cyril thanked the lads and walked slowly back up the steps to the flat. Every step was heavy, as if his shoulders were weighed down with a ton of bricks. It wasn't until he reached the door that he realised his cheeks were sodden. Peggy was shocked to hear him come in. She assumed he would go straight to his new place, since that had been the plan.
How did it go, love? She asked tentatively.
Cyril wandered into the kitchen where his mother was sitting at the table, adding up her green shield stamps. It didn't, Mum. She looked up and saw the devastating expression on her son's face. It was a look she'd never seen before.
Oh, Cyril, what's happened, love? She asked,
assuming that Flossie had turned his proposal down. He pulled a chair out and sat down.
She didn't turn up for the meal, so we came back. Her mother told me she'd gone out. I hoped she was just late, so we drove back to the restaurant. But on the way, we saw her. In another restaurant.
Peggy stubbed a cigarette out.
And what did she have to say for herself?
Cyril took a deep breath.
She didn't have to say anything because I didn't go into the restaurant to ask her. But it was obvious what was going on. She was with another man. It was Lord fucking Chambers.
Peggy threw her hands to her mouth in utter shock.
Oh my God, you are kidding me.
Cyril shook his head and pulled out the box from his pocket.
I saved up for months for this, and she didn't even get to see it, or the house that's all pink and frilly, just the way she would have liked it.
Peggy's blood was boiling, her heart rampaging.
Are you sure, darling, that it wasn't just a friendship with this Lord What's-His-Face?
No, he was draping her in some flash fur coat and snogging her neck in the fucking process.
He jumped up.
Sorry, Mum, I just want to be alone.
I know, son. I'm so sorry, babe.
She didn't know what else to say as she watched him slope off to his room. She picked up the box and opened the lid. The ring was stunning, the diamond was huge, and the ring mount itself was shaped in an amazing, intricate pattern. Biting her lip, Peggy tried to stop the sob that had stuck in her throat. It would hurt her poor lad for some time. She knew exactly how much he loved Flossie. When her son was in pain, then so was she. Young woman or not, Peggy would give the girl a piece of her mind. She'd always tried herself to act the lady, but she was too incensed to worry about lowering herself right now. Snatching her cigarettes, she went outside. She stood on the walkway and peered over, watching for the tart. If it meant she would stand there all night, then so be it. Flossie would get both barrels. Now feeling cold, Peggy slipped back inside, grabbed her coat and a scarf, and returned to the walkway. It was late and quiet, which was unusual for the estate. Rarely had she been outside at this hour in the morning. She was always tucked up in bed. Her hands shook with the chill that had reached her bones, but she lit another cigarette and watched the smoke and her warm breath produce large white clouds. She stared along the walkway at the empty milk bottles put out for the milkman, at the makeshift washing lines hanging from the rafters above, and at the pristine doorsteps. It amazed Peggy how the two older ladies who lived here always polished their doorsteps every week. She wondered if it was a competition, or whether they just couldn't get out of the old ways when they'd all lived in Bermondsey and Poplar, in houses with their pristine doorsteps brought to a shine with red boot polish. Peggy didn't miss the old ways at all. She'd never found scraping for pennies for coal and milk much fun. She could never sit back and laugh at how it was back in the good old days. It wasn't good at all. It was cold, harsh, and cruel. She had done things that she should never have had to do. And if it hadn't been for the need to feed her two little boys, then she would have died before earning money that way. The thought of that man's dirty hands made her shudder, and she pulled a deep drag on her cigarette. It had only been the once, and she'd been paid a few shillings for what she'd had to perform on the man. The money had, however, bought food and filled her son's tummies, but the memory would never leave her, and the disgust for herself would always soil her dreams. She'd smiled at Cyril when he said she would one day be the Duchess of his castle, but the truth was, she never could be, and he could never know the truth behind her past. She would die having her sons believe she was a good person. A rush of anger filled her veins when she thought of how Flossie had treated her son. There were so many young women out there who would have given their right arm to be spoiled and loved by a man like her, Cyril. She wasn't blinded by motherly love, either. She'd watched him wrap presents and get excited when he bought the latest fashionable dress in the shop. He would spread it out on his bed and ask for her opinion. Peggy would admire the material and the stitching, and every time she would think how lucky Flossie was. Now she was livid. Everything her Cyril had done for the girl, and she'd had the brass neck to treat him like a throwaway toy. And to make matters worse, she'd publicly humiliated him in the process. A gentle rumbling made Peggy stare up the road. There in the distance, she could see powerful headlights from a car heading towards the tower block. She watched the big car pull up and a tall man in a suit get out. He walked around to the passenger side and opened the door. And there, wearing a fur coat and with her signature hairstyle, was Flossie. Peggy was now raging. She ran along the walkway and down the stairwell. The sound of her slippers slapping the cold concrete would have woken some of the tenants, but she didn't care. She wanted to rip Flossie's hair off her head. By the time she reached the bottom, the Flash Bentley had driven away, leaving Flossie waving as if she were a queen.
"Why, you fucking no good tart! How could you do that to Cyril?" screamed Peggy.
Flossie spun around in horror to find Peggy with an expression like that of a monster's. Even in the poor light, Peggy's face was dark red and her jaw was tightly clenched. But it was those eyes of hers that made Flossie tremble. They were flashing in the moonlight, so piercing and narrow.
"Peggy, look, shut up. Don't you dare try to make an excuse for what you've done. That lad saved for months for a fucking ring for you, and he was going to propose and then take you to the house he bought for you and him."
Flossie didn't know where to look or where to go, because Peggy was blocking her way to the safety of her mum's flat.
"I didn't know,"
said Flossie, in a tone of voice that was both flat and uncaring.
"You fucking liar. Why else would my boy send a card to take you to the restaurant and tell you to wear something nice? You fucking knew, all right, but no, you didn't care, did you, eh?"
"It's not like that, Peggy. We were just growing apart. I didn't know he was buying a ring or a bleeding house. He should have said."
"You should have told my boy it was over before throwing your legs in the air for another man."
Flossie gasped.
"I haven't slept with..." "What? You mean you think the posh meal and the mink coat are free? Are you that fucking stupid?"
Peggy marched forward until she was a few inches from Flossie's nose. She snatched at the necklace that hung around Flossie's neck and in one quick movement ripped it off.
"But you fucking took this from Cyril and you had the gall to wear it when you went out with another man, didn't you? Well, didn't you?"
Peggy looked down at Flossie's boots.
"Even those boots were bought for you by my Cyril. You're one fucking horrible cow."
Flossie tried to push past Peggy, but it got her nowhere. Peggy was still on a mission. Grabbing Flossie's hand, she said,
"And look at those two rings. Gold fucking rings at that."
Then Peggy's eyes were drawn to what else Flossie was wearing. Peggy was now incandescent with rage.
"And you uncaring bitch. Those gold earrings were bought by my lad because he loved you, and he thought you loved him and all."
As Peggy continued to tear into the young woman, her voice steadily became louder and louder until the more angry she got, the more neighbours appeared to see what the ruckus was all about. Flossie's mother had heard enough. In her negligee and fluffy slippers, Sonia tore along the walkway and hurtled down the steps to get to her daughter before Peggy bashed the hell out of her. She knew Peggy had a fierce temper, and if Flossie wasn't careful, she suspected her daughter may just lose her looks.
"All right, Peggy, that's enough. You've made your point, and I have to say I don't disagree with a word you've said. My Flossie was wrong, but she's only a kid. Come on, love."
She tried to soften her tone before Peggy smacked her one in the face. Peggy turned to face Sonia.
"She's only a kid, is she? Is she? No, she ain't. She's a conniving whore, a backstabbing low-life excuse for a woman. And she must have fucking learned that from you. Because let's not be shy about it. You've been around the fucking block yourself, and the apple obviously ain't fallen far from the tree, has it?"
Peggy looked back at Flossie, who was now crying. The mascara ran down her cheeks, and she looked a mess.
"You're fucking pathetic, girl."
She spun back to Sonia.
"She could have been living in a beautiful house in Chislehurst with a fucking great rock on her finger. But oh no, she buggered off with a pompous prick and kissed goodbye to everything my Cyril had built for her."
Sonia stood open-mouthed and speechless until a voice behind made them all look.
"Mum, come on back to the flat. You've no need to get upset on my account." "There is nothing more to say," said Cyril,
as he put his meaty arm around her shoulders and pulled her away. Sonia grabbed her daughter's arm and hissed in her ear.
"You have well and truly pissed on your chips now. This lord won't buy you a bloody house in Chislehurst. You just remember this, Florence. A lord will see you as his bit on the bloody side, and if that life suits you, then so be it. But you understand this, my girl. Never try to be his wife, because they only marry their own kind. They never marry beneath them. So get any idea of being a real lady out of your head."
"No, Mum, he loves me. He said he would buy me the world. He lives in a mansion, and one day I will live in it.
He has a flat in Chelsea. He said we can live there until we get married. I've packed me case and everything.
So why didn't he take you to this flat in Chelsea?
Oh, well, it's been decorated at the moment, but in a few weeks we will move in and then we'll be arranging the wedding.
Sonia looked at her daughter and wondered how the hell she brought up someone as thick as shit. She shook her head.
You silly, silly girl. If the flat isn't ready, then why doesn't he move you into his mansion? In fact, it would have been ideal, wouldn't it, Flossie? With so many bedrooms, you could have slept in separate beds until the wedding day.
Her mother's sarcastic tone began to resonate with her daughter. At last, the penny had dropped. She looked up and saw Cyril with his arm around his mother. He didn't look back, and that was the moment she knew he never would. The one thing she'd learned about Cyril was that he would never be mugged off. Well, she had royally mugged him off. And in the worst way possible. Frank didn't mention anything to Trudy until they were inside their flat.
Trudy, babe, put the kettle on, love, will you? Said Frank, as he sat down in the living room on their new velvet sofa.
Trudy looked down at his shoes.
Oh, Frank, you know I like you to take your shoes off at the door. Bloody hell, I want to keep this little place of ours clean and tidy.
Frank looked around the room. It wasn't huge, but it was spotlessly clean and contained all modern furnishings, just how Trudy liked it. He thought about Cyril and felt sick for him. If only he had a bird like Trudy. She was a good girl, keeping a good home, working hard, cooking him dinners and ironing his shirts. He smiled as he watched her busy in the kitchen, not only making a cup of tea, but frying up some bacon and buttering some bread.
Blimey, Trude, it's 2 in the morning. Why are you cooking?
Because I'm starving. The portions in that restaurant are all right for the skinny Mary Quants of this world, but I am a larger woman. I need more to fill me up. And also, Frank, you have something to say, and I want to have a proper sit-down for a tell-all.
Frank stood back up and took his shoes off, walking across the room and leaving them at the door. He loosened his belt and sat back down. He didn't start talking until Trudy was settled with a cup of tea in one hand and a bacon sandwich in the other.
So, Trude, I ain't having you on when I say I was going to propose to you next week after Cyril had proposed to Flossie first.
He stopped and studied the look on Trudy's face. The bacon suddenly slid out of the sandwich and dropped on the plate.
Propose? What?
She squealed. Frank smiled.
Well, yes, I wanted it to be a surprise, but maybe we should wait a couple of months under the circumstances.
Trudy quickly plonked the cup and plate on the poof and launched herself at Frank, flinging her arms around him.
Marriage? What? Me?
Yeah, of course you silly mare. But wait, babe, I want to propose and I want it to be a surprise. So I thought I'd tell you now in case you had ideas of buggering off with some fucking poncy lord.
Trudy peeled herself away and sat back down, looking thoroughly confused.
What do you want about? What's actually happened? None of you lads will say. I rarely ask you about your business, Frank, but Flossie is me mate.
Frank nodded.
Yeah, well, she was seeing Lord Chambers behind Cyril's back. He was going to propose tonight and take her back to his big house he's just bought for her in Chislehurst.
Chislehurst?
Frank nodded.
Yes, and the ring, babe, cost as much as the house. Anyway, we saw her in a restaurant up the road with the Lord. He was kissing her in full fucking view. I swear to God I would have put him straight through that window and scarred his face so it looked like the London Underground map if he'd done that to me.
He shocked Trudy to the core. All this was new to her.
I'd never favour a Lord over you, Frank. You're all the man I want. And a wedding, eh? Me and you getting married. Oh, Frank, I can't wait. Listen, don't go spending a lot on a ring. I don't need an engagement ring. Just a wedding ring would do me fine. And then, if you want, we can start a family and...
Oh, hang on, Trude. We ain't even walked down the bleeding aisle yet. The reason I'm saying all this is that I feel Cyril dragged his heels for far too long. If only you proposed sooner, then maybe she wouldn't have gone off with this lord.
Yeah, I don't know what she sees in him. I told him to get lost the last time we saw him.
Frank was confused.
What do you mean by the last time we saw him? I thought the only time you saw him was at Gwynny's engagement party.
Trudy took a sip of her tea.
Oh, no. That posh lot are always hanging around the clubs that us girls go to on a Friday night.
You never said truth.
Why would I, Frank? You have your boys' nights out and us girls do the same. I don't ask you who you speak to. I trust you, Frank.
Frank nodded, looking at his girl in a fresh light. She was a good 'un and no mistake, he thought.
I trust you, girl. But what's that lord hanging around you lot for?
Oh, he's a chancer. He tried it on with me a few times. I told him I had a fella. He said he knew you and Cyril. He said you go way back. Something about a fish farm. But he was too pissed at the time, though, to tell me any more about it.
Frank felt the heat rising on the back of his neck.
Why, that fucking wanker.
Frank, whatever's the matter, darling?
Lord Chambers, did he really try it on with you?
Yeah, I didn't do anything, I swear. He was just a bit drunk, I guess, and he offered to take me out. I promise you, though, love, I said no to him and that I loved you.
Frank detected the panic in her voice.
Listen, Trude, I believe you. Please, just tell me everything. I swear to you, I won't get cross with you.
Well, he offered to buy me a drink and I refused. I don't like to be owing. You know me. Anyway, he kept joining me on the dance floor and he got on me nerves a bit. The next time we were at the club, he was going on about how you knew each other from Kent and something about a lake. I don't know. Like I said, I think he was pissed. Then a few weeks later, he was telling me how he could take me away from London and I could live in a beautiful mansion in the countryside with its own woods and a lake, and I would live like a princess. I said to him, if you're friends with my Frank, then why would you dare chat me up? He sniggered and wiped his moustache and said, because, sweet Trudy, I like you more. I thought then what a dickhead, and that was that, really. I never said anything to the girls because, well, let's be honest, look at me. I assumed he was just having a bet with his pals. I did hear one of them mention a game called Pull a Pig Night.
Frank got up from his seat and snatched Trudy's hands, pulling her to her feet.
You, my special girl, are the most beautiful woman this side of the water, and don't you forget it. I'll have that ring on your finger so no other fella can take you off me.
Make sure you get a large one, Frank. And only this side of the water, she chuckled.
Well, I ain't never been north of Watford, so I don't know. But south of the river's good enough for me.
She hugged him tight before they made their way to the bedroom.
I feel so sorry for Cyril. He really was besotted with Flossie. Do you reckon he will have Lord Chambers secretly buried someplace?
Frank pulled her onto the bed.
If he doesn't, I fucking will, chatting up my missus.
What about Flossie, though? Because I tell you right now, Frank, I won't be having anything to do with her. And once the other girls know what she's done, I don't expect they will either. Cindy ain't keen on her. She never has been.
Well, let's try to make Cyril feel better. I don't know how, but I hate seeing him so hurt.
Trudy agreed.
God help anyone who upsets him now, with all that fire in his belly.
Part 3. Chapter 27. Most of the South London club scene had security on the doors, and most of it was undertaken by Cyril's men. If they weren't Cyril's, they were those employed by him. The rave scene had proved to be very lucrative as well as a testing time, with rival businessmen trying to get in on the game. The Cedar Arms was now his pub, and any drugs, whether it be ecstasy or cocaine, were run through Cyril's firm, unless, of course, someone was stupid enough to get on the wrong side of him. The days of the post office jobs and bank jobs, and even the pavement work, were ending with the installation of cameras and this new DNA testing. So with all these scientific developments giving the police force more options in fighting crime, Cyril had to devise more detailed and cunning plans. He had also taken on additional men, and one, in particular, was beginning to make a name for himself. Eddie Raven. Cyril caught him breaking into his car, but when he held the youngster at gunpoint, the lad just laughed in his face and said,
"So it worked, Mr. Reardon. I've finally caught your attention."
Seeing a bit of himself in the young lad, Cyril took him into his fold and slowly taught him everything he knew. And it wasn't long before Eddie had gained respect beyond South East London. Cyril thought that one day he could hand over all the business to Eddie. He would then sit back and put his feet up, with the regular poke coming his way to keep him in summer holidays and flash cars for the rest of his days. Eddie had already asked to buy the Cedar Arms, and for a good price, and Cyril was giving it serious consideration. Now in his 40s, Cyril didn't have children of his own. In fact, he hadn't settled down with any one woman. The truth was, he had never really gotten over Flossie. Marcus had a daughter, and so did Frank. Even reckless Eddie had a daughter. Blakey didn't have children, and neither did he want any. But Cyril felt lucky to call all these children his nieces, and as far as he was concerned, they were all his family, along with his own mother and brother. It was late July when Cyril turned up at his mother's with a huge bouquet of flowers. He was in his new Jaguar XJ40 series, although the side panel did have a nasty dent in it. Once again, Cyril had misjudged the turning and taken it a bit too late. On his way along the walkway, he passed Sonia, who was now bent over with arthritis.
"Hello, Sonia. How are you, love?"
She tried to straighten up as much as she could and lift her cheeks to give him a smile, but it was hard, and she was in pain.
"Okay, Cyril, I guess. As good as can be expected."
He looked down and saw she had a rubbish bag in her hand.
"Here, give us that, love, and I'll take it down for you."
Sonia handed Cyril the bag and sighed.
"You're a good lad, Cyril. My Florence was a fool, a bloody fool."
Cyril gave her a sympathetic smile.
"I'm sure your Flossie's doing all right for herself. It was a long time ago, Sonia, and people move on." "Some of us don't, Cyril," she replied, before cautiously walking away.
Cyril knew exactly what she meant. Taking a moment's silent reflection, he glanced at the grey concrete step that he and Flossie had sat on in all weathers, talking, kissing, and planning for their future together. He sighed and hurried to dispose of Sonia's rubbish before he ran along the walkway to his mother's flat. She'd refused to move into his house with him. She enjoyed the community of the tower block. He didn't, though. He much preferred his landscape garden and the bar inside his house. On his to-do list was to install a pool, but he couldn't swim, and he knew he'd probably drown. But that wasn't the point. Cyril had reached a stage in his life when a man in his position opted for status.
"Happy birthday, Mum," he called out
as he opened the front door. Peggy was sitting by the window with a pink cardigan around her shoulders.
"Oh, Mum, it's baking in here. Open a bloody window, will you?"
He put the flowers on the table and rushed over to open the window.
"No, Cyril, love, leave it. I've got a chill."
Cyril turned to see his mother's pale face.
"Blimey, you look rough, Mum. Are you all right?"
Peggy shivered.
"I've got this bloody flu and a chest with it. Do us a favour, babe. Steam up some Vic, will you, in a bowl and fetch us a towel."
Cyril knew the routine. It had been the same whenever Howie got a chesty cough. She would fill the bowl with hot water and drop in some balsam. He himself could never explain how it worked, but it did. It worked a treat.
"Shit way to spend your birthday, Mum."
"Never mind, lad. I will have plenty more to celebrate. I was out last night playing cards. I only lost because I couldn't concentrate. And all to that bloody lord and all."
Cyril's blood ran cold and a chill shot down his back. As he took a deep breath, he loosened the tightness in his neck. All the aristocrats who had once frequented the same places as he had moved away from the London scene. The action was now taking place in Brighton. But nevertheless, he had heard that there were a few who had returned to their former London haunts and who liked to snort cocaine.
"Where did you play, Mum?"
"The Salvador, but they're playing downstairs for big money, and I mean big money. It's all chips and shit now. Me, I like a good old-fashioned game. Still, I didn't lose too much. I know when to stop."
"You should be a millionaire by now, Mum, what with all the games you've played and won."
Peggy laughed, but then she coughed violently, much to her son's concern. He hurried over with the bowl, removed the flowers, and put the bowl on the table.
"There you go, Mum. Just take a few deep breaths. Do you want me to get you anything else?"
Peggy had the towel over her head, but waved her hand, saying,
"No!"
Cyril put the flowers into water and put the kettle on again to make them both a cup of tea. Peggy stopped coughing and removed the towel. Cyril noticed how red and shiny her face was from the steam.
Are you sure you won't move into my house? I could do with a cleaner. I mean, Val's all right, but she's refused point blank to do any washing, and she hates ironing.
Peggy shook her head.
No, son. It's a waste of breath asking me to leave this flat. I like it here. And if Val's not pulling her weight, then get another cleaner.
As she looked her son up and down, she noticed how his hair had changed colour over the years, from blonde to fair to dark, and now a few strands of grey were appearing at the sides. But as he'd aged, he hadn't gained a beer belly, like some men. In fact, he still looked distinguished in his navy suit and white shirt. He'd even got his cheeky grin back. But there was one feature missing. He'd lost that particular charm he'd been renowned for many years now. Flossie had knocked it out of him. Peggy wondered if time really was a healer, or whether that saying was a load of claptrap.
So what about you, Cyril? Will you follow in my footsteps?
He smiled and winked. I might do. I've had enough practice over the years with the best teacher.
Peggy nodded understandingly.
You need a hobby, love. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
He chuckled. I hardly call my work dull. I don't think I've ever had 2 days the same.
No, I guess you're right there, babe. Life's never dull when you're around.
So the Toffs are playing cards at the Salvador then, are they?
Peggy pulled a handkerchief from her apron pocket and coughed into it.
I wish this cough would bloody go soon. I need to get back on me feet. Oh, sorry, son. Yeah, the posh lot are back in the club.
Mum, would you know if her Lord Chambers plays cards there?
Peggy inclined her head and frowned.
Yes, he was the man I lost the game to. That's what I was about to tell you.
Bloody hell, so he's back then. I knew he couldn't have disappeared off the face of the earth. I'm going to go and play that bastard and win all your money back.
What? All 25 quid?
Cyril laughed.
Oh, blimey, Mum, is that all you lost?
Peggy coughed again.
It's all about the principle, not how much you lose.
The hairs on the back of Cyril's neck stood on end. His mother was right. It was all about the principle.
He was the bloke that dated Flossie, she said, as she stopped coughing.
Yep, that's him. And he did it deliberately to get back at me. It doesn't matter now. It was too long ago.
If it hadn't been him, it would have been someone else, love.
Cyril agreed. But deep down, he knew the truth. Flossie went with him because of the money. And if he'd had more money than Lord Chambers, then he knew, in his heart, she wouldn't have buggered off so easily. Cyril drove his car to the lock-up. He smiled to himself every time he reached the garage door. The firm could meet anywhere, but for some reason they still loved to meet there, as if they were kids again.
Frank, my old friend, we're going to have a real good earner, and you, Blakey, are going to get your ballistic skills in tune.
Frank rolled his eyes.
Cyril, we have plenty of money. Marcus is sunning it in Spain with his family. I've got me villa almost built. Although, he said laughingly, the bank manager keeps asking me how the hell I earn the money for it. You want to tell him to mind his own fucking business? I'll tell you what, Frank, if he gets too nosy, we'll rob his bank, and then when he asks again, you could just smile at him. So what did you have in mind? Asked Frank.
Cyril pulled out what looked to Frank like a scroll from a cardboard tube.
What's that?
Asked Frank, as he stood up from his chair. Cyril placed the rolled-up sheet of paper on the table and put a few tools on the corners to keep it flat.
That there, my son, is probably 5 million quid's worth of goodies.
Frank and Blakey stared at the drawings, trying to make them out. They'd never seen an architect's set of drawings before.
It's the safe deposit building in New Street, said Cyril, pleased with himself. Mr. Bates left these to me years ago, and I've sat on them. Them? Queried Frank. Yeah, this is just one. I have another one, the main safe deposit box building up the West End. But I was thinking, let's do this one first and leave it a couple of years before going for the biggie.
Blakey turned the sheet around until he could visualise the building.
That's the fruit and veg shop next door. Yes, Blakey, although it's not attached. Shame, because that would be too easy. But look at the drawing. The cellars are attached.
Frank shook his head.
I don't have a clue what you're on about.
Ignoring Frank, Blakey was studying the drawing carefully.
Cyril, look here. See, that wall is what they call a single brick facade. The wall will have two skins separated by a cavity for ventilation. Look there.
Blakey pointed at a particular spot on the plan.
There are no metal structures in the footings. None that I can see, anyway. All we want to hope is that they haven't made any major changes since the building was built. Well, I've already paid the place a visit and opened an account, so I've been inside. And judging by the building, none of it looks new. It's all old solid wood, no metal, no new tiled floor. The skirting looks original as well, so I reckon the footprint ain't been changed one bit. I can blow through two walls, that's piss easy. Although I'll need a couple of heavy-duty jacks, so the whole lot will fall in. That's a tall and heavy building. I want to look at the cellar. It looks to me like it follows the structures of the main walls, which means I can blow through underground. What else do you need? Blakey was still studying the drawing. I don't know yet, Cyril, but we need more than us three. I can bring Tommy on board. No way. I believe he stitched up Eddie Raven when he did the last heist for Mickey and Jack. Eddie may be in the slammer, but God help Tommy when he gets out, if Eddie ever finds him. He fucked up Jack and Mickey big time, the reckless bastard. No more talk about Eddie. We need to think of someone else we can trust. What about Ronnie? Suggested Blakey. Yep, and Keith, replied Frank. Right then, let's get to work, lads. I'll sort out a plan and organise a van.
Blakey and Frank each shot Cyril a questioning look.
You ain't driving it, though, Cyril, are you? Asked Frank.
Looking somewhat shocked, Cyril said,
I'll have you know my driving has mightily improved. Mate, the last job we did, you fucking did more damage to the motors in the street than Blakey could have done with his single stick of gelignite. It was the gloves. They made the steering wheel slippery. Jesus, we got away, didn't we? Frank shook his head. I'm driving this time. Whatever.
Cyril's plan fell into place as always. The fruit and veg shop run by Mr. Lamp needed revamping, but Ronnie owned a building company. He had gone in with a quote to turn the greengrocer's place into a modern, inviting shop with a fashionable open plan effect. He intended to take down the partition wall, put a lintel in, and have it all plastered smooth. He'd build a waist-high small wall and worktop for the till and for Mr. Lamp to wrap the fruit and veg. He would also build new racks for shelving so Mr. Lamp could offer more variety of produce. Ronnie and Keith had each grown a moustache, coloured their hair and worn fake glasses every day Mr. Lamp was there. Mr. Lamp and his wife were an elderly couple anyway and wouldn't have noticed much about the men's appearance, certainly not enough to pick them out in an ID parade. When she saw the quote, Mrs. Lamp was chomping at the bit, and so the work began. The back of the shop was opened up, and a steel lintel put in. To be on the safe side, they kept the machinery and the building materials down in the cellar during the time that the work wasn't supposedly being carried out. However, it was being done through the cellar. They'd parked a white builder's van at the back for 2 weeks, and so it became part of the furniture, with nothing looking odd or out of place. Meanwhile, Ronnie and Keith had taken it in turns to tunnel through the single brick facade between the two buildings. The tunnel, with its makeshift supports, was crude, but the lads thought they would hold up long enough to do the job. Mr. Lamp rarely ventured into the cellar because he was too frail, and also because he had no need to. He just assumed the builders knew exactly what they were doing. That being the case, Mr. and Mrs. Lamp went down to their daughter's place in Devon, since the plaster dust was affecting Mr. Lamp's emphysema. When the time came to blast through the final concrete and steel wall, Blakey was ready. Ronnie and Keith made sure the walls were safely held up, since even a blast would make the supports wobble. They wouldn't risk Blakey, their youngest brother, suffering a cave-in. Frank was ready to drive the van. He'd already set out his route and done a dummy run in his car. Cyril had bought the van. It was an old Ford Transit, but he'd made sure that the engine was brand new, along with new tyres, and he'd filled the van up with fuel. Their only concern was that the night guard would hear the bang and go to investigate, or worse, set the alarm off. It was connected directly to the nearest police station. Blakey only had one chance to blow a hole big enough for Cyril and his shotgun to get through. Bang on midnight, the work began. Frank had the van pulled up to the back of the shop with the rear doors open. Blakey had the gelignite poked into the cracks that his brothers had made, and then they all stepped back and waited for the bang. Once they could see beyond the dust, Cyril tried to climb through the gap. But he struggled.
Well, fucking help, will ya?
Blakey, Ronnie and Keith used all their efforts to push him through.
Get in there, you fat bastard, said Blakey jokingly, as he pushed and pushed.
Then, like popping a spot, Cyril was in. With his balaclava pulled down, he ran up the stairwell and into the room where he knew the security guard would be. Ready to hold a gun to his head, Cyril was fired up, only to find the guard was asleep, with his feet up on the desk, a half-eaten sandwich left on the side, and his mouth open. Cyril crept back to the hole to find Blakey inserting more gelignite to make the hole bigger.
The guard's soundo, so let's be quick, lads. I'll watch the guard while you fill the potato sacks.
He then hurried back upstairs. Cyril heard another bang, but moments later, Blakey came into the guard's room.
The fucking door has a code on it.
Cyril couldn't remember the door having a code. Then he realised that when he had deposited his goods, the door was open.
Oh, shit! Right, have you got your shooter?
Yeah.
Well, Blakey, just fucking blast it off. If Fat Boy here wakes up, then I'll have a word in his shell-like.
Blakey looked at the guard.
Here, are you sure he's not dead? He doesn't look right to me.
Cyril leaned closer to the guard and smelled his breath.
He's fucking drunk, that's why. Get a move on, mate, before he wakes up.
The bang from the gun didn't stir the guard at all, so Cyril gave the lads a hand in emptying the boxes. After 15 minutes, they cleared the contents of every box and made their way back through the hole in the wall. Frank helped them load the van. Before Ronnie left the shop, he grabbed a handful of notes from his coat pocket and popped them into Mr. Lamp's till. They locked the shop up and drove away. They didn't go to the lock-up. Instead, they went to the butcher's shop, where they used the back room to unload their potato sacks. Then it was a waiting game until Frank had driven the van to the Arches, changed the number plates, collected his own car and returned to the butcher shop.
Well, lads, let's divide this lot up, said Cyril, rubbing his hands together. How do we divvy up this jewellery? Asked Ronnie, staring at the gems. Right, me, I don't know much about gems. I think the fairest way is to roll the dice. Let's say I get a 6. That means I get first dibs. If Frank gets a 4, and let's say Keith gets a 3, then Frank gets second dibs, and so on. So we'll put all the Tom in the middle and go around, each taking a piece we fancy.
Everyone agreed, and for an hour they went around the table as if they were playing a board game. After all the jewellery was divided up, they then got to work counting the money. Once they were all done, they sat back and smiled, but Cyril nudged Blakey.
Here, I just want to clear something up. I ain't fucking fat, he said, as he looked down at his flat-toned stomach.
Frank roared.
Ha ha ha! Jesus, Cyril, you are easy to wind up.
By the next morning, they'd all gone their separate ways. They decided to keep it that way for a few weeks and agreed not to flog any of the jewellery for a while. Chapter 28. 3 months later. Cyril stashed his money away in a briefcase. He had plans for that. Mr. Ezra had valued his pieces of jewellery, and Cyril was chuffed that he'd chosen the right ones. Not that the others had lost out. Far from it, as they were all in for at least 1 million.